Hey folks, this is Ken, and before we get started, I want to let you in on some exciting news. So on Sunday, May 22nd at 12 p.m., HGTV is going to be airing the pilot episode of Flipping the South, starring my wife and myself. Again, that's on HGTV, May 22nd at 12 p.m. Set your DVRs and tune in. Thanks so much for your support.
You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with the Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I've got Rod Cleef. Rod's actually one of America's top real estate professionals. He's personally owned, get this folks, more than 2,000 single-family homes and multiple apartment communities. He's built several multi-million dollar businesses, and he's very knowledgeable and active right now in the multifamily realm. So hey, Rod, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's great to be here, Ken. I appreciate you allowing me on.
Well, I appreciate having a fellow podcaster on here with me, and I know you've got a lot of experience, you know, with multifamily, which we haven't had many guests talk about multifamily, so I'm excited to dive in. I guess if you would, though, take us back before you got into multifamily investing and single family investing. What were you doing before that?
Sure. Well, I grew up in Colorado, and I actually got my real estate broker's license when I turned 18. You were able to do that then. You didn't have to have experience. You could do it all with schooling. And, you know, I thought I was going to be rich. And my first year in real estate, I made 10 grand, which wasn't bad back then, actually, for being 18.
That's not
my
bad.
My second year I made 15 grand, but then my third year I made over 100 grand. And I like to tell people that, you know, my sales teams and things like that about that, because what changed for me between years two and three was knowledge, number one, which impacted my confidence. And the confidence is what made all the difference in the world. But then I started seeing, you know, agents and brokers that were buying real estate, because I was just listing, you know, listing and selling. And you know, as anybody that does that knows, you know, if you're a broker, and I know a lot of fantastic brokers that do very well, but they have to work every year. Mm-hmm. And I saw these people that were buying investment real estate, and you know, from the cash flow, it really wasn't much of a job. It was really you know, much easier than what I would call a job. And so I quickly, you know, realize the value of investing in real estate. I decided to do a buy and hold. You know, I did a little bit of flipping, but I'm real good with systems. And, you know, I ended up buying 500 houses in Denver in the late 80s.
Wow.
Then I bought a couple hundred houses in Memphis, which I don't really like to talk about. I call that a seminar. By the way, I've had spectacular successes and equally spectacular failures. And I call my failures seminars because you always learn from them. But
absolutely.
But, you know, I ended up buying a couple hundred in Memphis, and then I bought over 1,300 in Florida. And, you know, and I had some apartment complexes. You know, so I've owned over 2,000 houses and some apartment complexes. But, you know, when 2008 hit, I got my butt handed to me because in here in Florida, particularly in the market that I was in, the lower end houses, yeah, the taxes are high, the insurance is high, turnover is high. And so I had to sell or refinance a house occasionally just to, you know, cover the cash flow. They really didn't cash flow. But what's amazing is I was at a 30% loan to value. For those of you listeners that don't know what that means, basically if for every $100,000 house I owned, I only owed 30 grand overall. So, you know, but then when the 2008 hit, I actually went upside down. So that's how much it crashed down here.
Wait, so, and, wow, holy cow. You were at a 30%
loan to value.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
And then that was your own cash in play?
That was appreciation.
Okay.
That was appreciation too, and some of my cash, sure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I bought right, and that was appraised value. Appraised value.
Wow.
I owed, I don't know all the exact numbers now, tens of millions, but it was real painful. But the big problem was I couldn't cash flow. So what was amazing is my multifamily stuff was doing just fine. It was my single family stuff that I got hurt on. So I realized, you know, back then and realize now that in my opinion, my humble opinion, multifamily is the way to go. And so You know, that's why I started my podcast, the Lifetime Cashflow Podcast, and that's all I talk about is multifamily. That's my shtick. And, you know, I know there are a lot of guys out there that are making a lot of money flipping and doing quite well, and, you know, and or wholesaling and doing quite well. The only thing, you know, that I would say to that again is every January 1st, they go back to work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you buy enough multifamily, and at some point you're not working anymore. And, you know, that appeals to me. And, mm-hmm. and so I enjoy talking about that.
Multifamily, usually that's investing. Wholesaling is running a business. And it's like right. you said, they're two very different things. You might, you know,
correct.
Pay your bills flipping houses, but right. you invest for the long term, and that's typically your multifamily or even your portfolio of single family if that's what you're into.
Right. Well, not anymore. I'm totally pushing towards multifamily based on my $50 million seminar.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So did you lose most of those houses then in Florida?
Yes,
wow.
I'm embarrassed to say that publicly, but yeah, I did. You know, it's all good. I mean, I've recovered. I'm back in a big way, but it was a big seminar. And yeah. so I don't want any of your listeners to have that seminar.
Sure.
And you know, there is likely a correction coming. And I've interviewed a billionaire on my podcast, and I've got friends that study macroeconomics, and they all say there's a correction coming. They all say it won't be as bad as 08, but it's still coming. So, you know, I know that multifamily is much more recession proof mm-hmm. than single family. With a single family home, and again, you know, God bless the people that are doing it. I think you can make a lot of money in it, but I would just be cautious on a buy and hold strategy at least, because, you know, if you're empty in your single family house, your tenant moves out, you're 100% vacant.
Mm-hmm.
Most multifamily, even a duplex or a triplex, typically if one unit's empty, you're still okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, now obviously based on my experience, I have a lot, you know, my tolerance for potential risk has let's just say my acuity has been enhanced. And so, you know, that's why I like multifamily. Just for the, you know, you don't have to worry about a correction as much. You know, it's really a long-term investment play. And so, you know, I've seen so many hugely successful people take whatever money they make in whatever else they're doing or from flipping or from wholesaling and invest that in multifamily, and they're hugely successful.
Mm-hmm. What did that shift look like for you? I mean, obviously 08 came and all of a sudden your real estate's upside down. How did you make that transition to focusing more on multifamily?
Well, you know, I had to recover from all that, and I actually started another business that did quite well. But you know, now I've you know, not in the fairly recent past, decided to do this real push into multifamily again. And it's fairly I'll be honest, it's fairly recent. It's less than a year old. And just getting things going and, you know, getting back up to speed. And, you know, there's it's not, you know, if someone wants to do this and get into it, they need to study it a little bit, you know, and I even had to go back and look a little bit. And so, you know, I recommend, oh, by the way, I'm actually about done with a book. It'll be done in a couple of months. It's about lifetime cash flow through multifamily real estate investing. And I will give it to your listeners for free. And it's
Awesome.
There's no upsell. I don't sell anything. I probably never will, you know, but it'll be really good content. So if they want it, they can, text ROD Rod my name to 41411. So that's Rod to 41411, and I'll put them on the list for that book when it's done. Don't hold me to having it done right away, but it'll definitely be packed with value. So I'm happy to give that to you.
And what's the name of the book?
You know what? It's not titled yet.
Okay.
I think it'll be something along the lines of my podcast name, which is Lifetime Cash Flow through Real Estate Investing. But something along those lines, which is what I believe in. I mean, I believe in building an annuity, you know, building
sure.
something that cash flows, be it a business or be it real estate. And to me, multifamily is the safest real estate annuity to build.
Mm-hmm. We'll put that in the show notes as well, folks. Texting Rod to 41411. So you've been at this, well, I guess, really focused on multifamily then here over the last year. What does that look like for you? How are you sourcing? Because I think that's the first thing people ask is, okay, I'm interested. Where do I go find a deal to invest
in? Sure. Well, I've put together a mailing campaign And that's, you know, there's a lot of money chasing deals right now. And so, you know, I like to get deals before the brokers get them. And so I believe in mailing, direct mail. And, okay. You know, there's a whole strategy to that. You know, you mail them more than once, you know, you try to dig in to find out who really owns it. And I may even do, outbound call campaign to actually call. You know, I've always believed that people that are willing to do what other people won't do mm-hmm. are the ones that are a success. And so, you know, I'm willing to take it to another level. I mean, when I was listing and selling and buying houses back in Colorado a lifetime ago, I would go knock on doors of people in foreclosure. I mean, very few people did that, but I did it and I was very successful. That's how I got 500 houses in Denver. So, you know, you roll up your sleeves and you work it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how I'm sourcing, typically direct mail. Now, you know, you want to develop relationships with brokers in the area that you're interested in. That would be the other way. But you know, I like off market deals. So.
Sure. Oh yeah. We do too. Just more in the single family space, but
sure.
You know, it's interesting. I owned a commercial property. It was actually a boat and RV storage. So not totally dissimilar from the concept of multifamily, you know, you've
right.
diversified risk
and
we got on occasion some direct mail, even from brokers looking for listings and whatnot. And those are the people we ended up talking to.
Sure.
And,
if they get you at the right time, you know, it's that's why you have to have repetition, because they may not be interested then,
yep.
but if you hit them when they are interested, they'll call you. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to deal with a broker. They think they can do it themselves. And those are the opportunities, particularly for seller financing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you're able to communicate directly with the seller versus through an intermediary, you can bond with them. You can develop a relationship. They can really see who you are and what you're about. And you'll typically be able to negotiate a much better deal.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if you're trying to sell them on seller financing, you can communicate the tax benefits, you know, of going that route versus cashing out and paying all the taxes and then trying to reinvest that money at, you know, at a horrible, horrible rate. So, you know, there's some real advantages to being one-on-one with sellers, which is why I believe in the mailing and the direct contact.
Sure. Is there a specific market that you are targeting right now that you're buying in?
I'm fairly diverse because we're still identifying markets. But I'll tell you the states that I'm in. I'm, of course, in Florida. I'm in Sarasota, Florida. So I'm, of course, there. I'm in Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, and North Carolina. And eastern half of Tennessee from Nashville over.
Okay.
I'm not going within 100 miles of Memphis. And please forgive me, any of you that live in Memphis, but you know what I'm talking about anyway.
You've got some bruises from Memphis.
You have no
some
idea.
Sore feelings.
I bought houses in Memphis for $1,500, three-bedroom, two-bath houses for $1,500 a piece, and I regretted it. So that should tell you something.
Wow. You know, that's interesting because – there's so many turnkey operators set up in Memphis selling cash flowing properties that I haven't heard that much negative about it. Just that it's you know, sort of a blue collar, high rental area. And I guess
that was just my experience, you know, probably maybe I didn't know what I was doing back then. Who knows? I gotta be in all fairness to people that are successful there, but you know, I may have bought in areas I shouldn't have bought at, as well, but yeah, that's not true either because I was very diversified. Yeah, I just had a bad experience.
Wow.
Could have just been mine, yeah.
Yeah, no, so again, not to diverse too far, but you bought before the crash in Memphis or?
Oh, yeah, God, okay. Yeah. We're
so
talking
you were,
20 years ago.
I got
20
you.
Years ago, yeah.
And that's really when it seems like a lot of the operators ramped up was after the crash, which
right.
is ridiculous cash flow because they were picking up properties at pennies on the dollar.
Sure, sure. No, that was a great time, and unfortunately, I was licking my wounds at that time. Unfortunately,
yeah. Well, as were a lot of other people. I mean, it wasn't
right.
like you're the only guy that owned a bunch of properties that got stung when the market turned. I mean, it's a pretty common thread.
You know, I will say one other thing. You know, it takes about as much time to qualify and buy a 20-unit apartment building as it does to buy a house, and sometimes it's even easier to buy the apartment building because the financing and the ability to you know, work with the down payment in some cases. So, you know, I'm like I say, I'm standing on my soapbox about multifamily.
No, but you're actually, you bring up a really good point because I get construction loans and development loans and whatnot through my local bank. And you're right. It's less involved for me to get qualified for these large projects than it is to just get a loan from a conventional lender on a single family home. It's unbelievable the difference.
Right, right. And I will say one other thing while I'm on that topic. Guys, if you're interested in just getting started, you can buy a duplex all the way up to a quad using FHA financing, very low down financing, but you got to move into it. Okay. So, you know, if you see a fourplex that you'd be willing to move into or a duplex or whatever, you can get your start with very low down financing, and the seller can contribute. You can structure your deal where the seller contributes some of the down payment and some of the closing costs. So don't be afraid to do that as, you know, as an option. I interviewed somebody that started out that way, and that's ingenious. So, you know, you can start small, yeah. But you know, and some people start at 100 units. So, you know, you can go whichever direction you like.
That's a really good point. And even potentially, you know, a fourplex that needs renovation, you get a 203K loan. That's an FHA product.
Right.
Move in and fix the thing up, and you're only talking about 3.5% down. I mean, that's right. Crazy. That's a great way to start investing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And even conventional loans will go up to a quad. They'll go up to a fourplex as well. So even, you know, getting 20% down. But you're right. I mean, some people start there and then find that, wait a second, it's not as hard as I thought to put together a 50 or 100-unit apartment deal either. What are you targeting in terms of size? I'm curious.
50, I say 50, but I look at 42. But see, because I'm going in other markets, out of state markets, I need to make sure that they're large enough to sustain on-site management of some sort. Mm-hmm. So I don't like to go less than 40. Okay. And I, you know, I will do like a 20 and a 30 if they're within driving distance of each other where one manager can work both. But, you know, 40 to 50 would be my absolute minimum. And that can be a combination of more than one property if that opportunity exists.
I gotcha. That's a good point I mean, it's important to be able to, especially if you're not nearby, to have an on-site manager. Is that usually one or two people?
Usually somebody that gets a free apartment that keeps an eye on things. You know, you still have to manage that person, but you need eyes and ears there, somebody that can put notices on the door, somebody that can, you know, let you know that somebody needs to do something with the property, or they're not picking up the trash or whatever. But actually, that person would typically pick up the trash. I want to mention one other thing, and that is the management differences between single family and multifamily. Now this is coming from somebody that had 800 houses in Florida, 2 hours in each direction. Okay. So, you know, I had, you know, 400 houses north, 400 houses south, between, you know, 5 miles and whatever 2 hours drive is each direction. Imagine the management component there. Every house has different plumbing. Mm-hmm. Every house has different sewer, different appliances, different electrical scenarios. The beauty of buying multifamily in most cases is all of that will be similar, and most importantly, it's in one place. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're sending a maintenance guy, like in my experience, you know, all over to go to different houses, you've got travel time, you've got, you know, they have to run and get parts. That takes time and money, and most importantly, it's expensive. So there's a real management advantage to multifamily.
Well, there's all sorts of efficiencies. You're right, by just having all your tenants in one location instead of spread out all over the place. That makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
What other due diligence do you do, especially not being in the same market? What are you looking for in terms of a good deal versus, you know, a bad deal?
Well, that's a fairly lengthy. Let me give you some highlights. Okay. You know, first we're going to, of course, check the rents and see if the property's at market rent. Then we're going to look at the expenses. Once we get the accurate financial information from the seller or the seller's broker, then we're going to look at the expenses, and we know that they should be in the 40 to 60% of the gross income range. If they're higher than that, then we see opportunity there, because remember, all commercial, including multifamily real estate, is valued based on the net operating income, which is the difference between the gross income less the expenses. So, you know, and that, the bottom line of that, that's net operating income. And it's all, you raise and lower the value of a property by that number raising or lowering. So, you know, we're going to look at rents. We're going to look at expenses. We're going to look at the area. I was in St. Louis with my wife, who's from Belleville, which is kind of an East St. Louis suburb. And there's a big base there. And we found some pretty good deals there on multifamily, but I come to find out that base, although it looks good, is the major employer. So I don't like one horse towns. Mm-hmm. I don't like, you know, if that employer, if you're in a market where there's a huge employer and that employer leaves and the market's going to get decimated, that's a little shaky for me. And there's supposed to be a bunch of base closings in 2017, you know. So mm-hmm. you know, that made me really reconsider that market. But you're looking for employment growth. You're looking for population growth. You're looking for, you know, you might want to call their economic development committee and see, you know, what they're doing to stimulate growth in that market. You make those phone calls. They're very, you know, and you do that. You can do that research on, you know, websites online, and don't ask me to tell you which ones because I can't. But I know you can go to the sure. Census Bureau. I have somebody that does that for me. But you want to check all those things, you know, and then, you know, as far as once you're on, you know, once you've got a letter of intent out or a contract done, then your due diligence, of course, is very physical. You've got to do an environmental check. You've got to, you know, go through all the units, you know, do a full physical inspection, and then make sure that all the information you were given from the seller regarding income and expenses is accurate. And then you do your own analysis to see how you can improve the top line income by raising rents or maybe billing back the utilities or something to improve the income. And then how you can maybe cut the expenses. Sometimes, you know, a seller will have hired a manager that's become a friend and they're way overpaid. So, you know, things like that happen. So, you know, you look for those opportunities and then you multiply the net operating income by what's called a cap rate, which is a, you know, I don't know if you want me to get into that, it's a little bit more complex, but basically most commercial real estate is valued by multiplying a cap rate by the net operating income. And that cap rate is market driven and can be anywhere from 4% to 20%. You know, the lower the number, the more valuable the property is in the eyes of the whatever market it's in. So, you know, I like to buy at 12 caps, but you know, it might be a property that's marketed as an 8 cap, but when you look at the income and expenses and you realize there are inconsistencies, and you know, you can actually realize it is a 12 cap. So, you know, that's all by doing that due diligence.
Well, you probably, there's usually a direct correlation between the cap rate and whether it's like an A class, B class, C class property.
That as well. That is absolutely correct. And how strong the market is. You know, right now cap rates are fairly low, mm-hmm. particularly on the higher end. You know, the A class and B class properties. So
yeah. It seems like, I mean, there's 4% and 6% caps out there for
That's
some
right.
of the really desirable properties, and the stuff in the 10, 12, even 15% range tend to be your more B, C class.
That's exactly right.
Just sort of what your threshold is for, you know, the quality and the where it's located and all those good things.
There are B class properties out there that can be had at 12 caps if you know, if you dig in, you know, you can discover you know, little diamonds in the rough that people have overlooked because they haven't dug into the numbers.
Mm-hmm. So what do you typically target? Are you looking for those B class that perform a little bit better?
That those are the ideal. I will go to C class just because I grew up at, you know, buying you know, tougher properties, and I have no fear of it at all. But certainly prefer B class properties. I don't do A. Yeah, I prefer B to high C. Those are the sweet spot for me.
Yeah, it seems like maybe my guess would be there's more institutional type money that doesn't mind the lower caps, but more stability on sort of those A class properties.
All, you know, the REITs, mm-hmm. the, you know, the big money, you know, they want A to high B class properties because, you know, they've got the money to spend. They can operate on very thin margins.
Yeah.
And, you know, typically they're not borrowing the money, so they have a low cost of funds. You know, there you go.
So you had mentioned that you've worked with Tony Robbins over the years in terms of the psychology of investing and being successful. Maybe talk about that for a few minutes.
Well, I have done 3 or 4 of his events for 16 years every year. And a lot of people out there get caught in analysis paralysis, or they're afraid to take action. And I will give you just a real quick, and I have some short 4 or 5 minute clips called Your Driving Force Success Tips, and they're really all about the psychology of success. I'm sorry, and whatever success means to you. So, but what most people don't realize is that 80% of a success in anything is your psychology. 20% is actually the mechanics, the stuff we're talking about, you know, talked about previously. That's 20%. 80% is your psychology and your ability and desire to take action. So, you know, it's important to know what you want, number one. It's important to know why you want it, number two. And then it's important to put it in front of you. You know, I've got numerous vision boards. I've got pictures. If you look at the walls in my exercise room in front of my office, right here in my office, you'll see pictures of things that I want. And that's worked for me. You know, I can give you numerous examples where I've visualized things that I've wanted, from exotic cars to my house on the beach to you name it. I visualized it, and so I talk about visualization and how you can manifest things. You know, it's kind of like that movie The Secret. They talk about things like this, and that stuff works. I mean, I used to think that was foofy, but then I realized, you know, when I looked back on it after I saw that movie, that's what I was doing. I had a picture of a Corvette on the visor in my ugly 4-door Granada before I got my Corvette. And then I had a picture of a Ferrari on the visor of my Corvette before I got my Maserati, which looked just like a Ferrari. And then, you know, I always wanted a Lamborghini, and I had pictures of those, and I ended up with one of those. I wrecked it, but I had one of those too.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, I believe in that. I believe in visualizing what you want, and that's what's going to drive you when you get your butt kicked and you get bloodied a little bit, and you know, you got to pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and look at your outcomes on the wall or wherever they are. You know, it's funny, I've got my planner right here, and I'm opening it up as we're talking, and I've got pictures in this planner that have been in here literally for 15 years of things that I want. And what's funny is I've got 3/4 of these things. You know, from the cars to the, and I showed this to my son the other day, and it actually surprised me as well. So, you know, that stuff works, guys, and you know, don't dismiss it. It really does work.
You know, my interview last week was with Leah Kraft-Christine, and she talked about a lot of the same principles in terms of visualizing success and having the proper mindset and being emotionally intelligent enough to understand yourself and what you're thinking and to be successful. I agree 100%.
Let me add one caveat, sure. One caveat, and this is just a little tip for those of you that are actually going to do this. You get your pictures of what you want, then visualize them with emotion, with gratitude, like you already have them, like thank you. Thank you. And as if you already have them, I'm telling you, that's the little secret sauce. That emotion makes all the difference.
Interesting. So, that's great. So you've obviously been very successful. You've owned a ton of real estate over the years. Is there any particular deal that stands out to you as your best deal ever?
Oh, I'll give you two. One, a single family home I bought in Denver, and I basically, for all practical purposes, wholesaled it for about 130 grand. That was a great single family deal.
And 130 grand profit?
Yes.
Holy moly, on a wholesale.
Yeah, and my dumb ass actually went to the bank and cashed a check because I wanted to carry around 130 grand. They had the guard walk me out.
Yeah, they had to go.
And, I know. And I was young and stupid. I'm just stupid now.
You'd visualize holding 130 grand in your hand, and you'd make
there
it
you
happen.
There you go. It might have been 120, but don't hold me to that number. It was over 100 grand. Let's say
that
way. Okay. So that's one. And then the other one was this apartment complex I had here in Florida that was 88 units. But the win there was there were 5 acres that were zoned for another, I don't know, 100 units. So it was very, you know, that was kind of like we kind of didn't realize how valuable that extra piece of real estate was. So those are my two.
Did you end up selling the additional real estate or developing it yourself?
No, neither. It didn't work out actually, but I talk about that because there are opportunities that you may not see when you're looking at a property that in this case it didn't work out for me, and I don't want to get into why, but it was an opportunity. It could have been huge.
Yeah.
And so. You know, when you're looking at properties, multifamily or any other commercial for that matter, sometimes the highest and best use is not what's happening there right now. And there can be some real opportunities to make some big money. And we have another one of those we're looking at right now that you know, is a small property but is zoned. It shouldn't be hard to rezone it for much higher density, and that means more money, guys. If you can put more units on a property, that means more money. So, you know, that's why I brought that opportunity. I mentioned that deal because it's out there.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of times people just don't see it, or people don't have the education or the wherewithal to do the work to get it rezoned or to build a house on that extra piece of land. You're right. There's a lot of times you just have to look at a deal, you know, from a different lens to see how it works.
Right.
And to make it happen. Rod, this was great. So people, if people want to get in touch with you or want to learn more or partner with you in a deal, what's the best way they can get in touch with you?
Well, I'm happy. They're welcome to email me if they like. It's rod@rodkleef.com. That's Rod at rodkhleif.com. I'd love it if you're interested at all, come listen to my podcast, Lifetime Cashflow Podcast. And good luck to you guys that are out there doing this, because it's a lot of fun. Learn to love it. If you don't love it, learn to love it, because you got to love what you do. And I do. I absolutely love real estate. So I'm sure you do as well.
Oh, same thing. Yeah. Well, just the fact that you're writing a book for free, you're not upselling. It's just this is something you really enjoy and you like giving back. And I really appreciate the fact that you just want to give back. And that's fantastic. Yeah. It shows that you really love what you're doing.
Thanks, Ken. I appreciate that.
So we'll put this in the show note, guys. We'll put his email address. Also, check out the podcast, Lifetime Cashflow, through Real Estate Investing Podcast. Rod, thanks so much for coming on the show. This was fantastic.
My pleasure, Ken. Take care.
All right, you as well.
All right, bye.
Hey folks, this is Ken again, just reminding you to check out the premiere of the pilot episode, Flipping the South, on HGTV, premiering Sunday, May 22nd at 12 p.m. Again, based on the success of the pilot, the number of people that watch it and DVR it, HGTV will decide whether or not to pick it up and make it a series, so we would love your support. Again, Sunday, May 22nd at noon, if you would record and watch Flipping the South on HGTV. Thanks so much for your support.